sense were very good, so I also welcome them, because I've got it from you that they were very good. But my interest now will be just in the last presentation regarding the school governing bodies. It is just a comment, because they say the government, let me say first, when we talk of the school governing bodies now, most people now would think of the school governing bodies in the former Model C schools, those that are working are doing well because they have got capacity. But I'm worried about the school governing bodies now in the rural areas, because the school governing bodies in the rural areas, they are not well capacitated. Most of the time now, they are just easily influenced. Even if these appointments or nominations are made, that is now appointing the principals, HODs and deputy principals, these people now will just be easily influenced by the unions. I've seen this happening in the rural schools, because these people, these members or these people are not well capacitated. They will be influenced by the unions, and in the most cases, the people that will be appointed or nominated for the positions now would be the teachers that are active in the unions. The teacher who's just quite not active now would never, in most cases, be appointed to a certain position or nominated because of the lack of capacity on the part of the school governing bodies. So I would suggest that now, at least we should try now to capacitate these school governing bodies in the rural areas, because they are not appointing. These people are not appointing. They just recommend to the department. For instance, now they may just give three names, then department will appoint. Then they say, if we say that it has got to be done with the consultation with these people. So if a teacher, a principal is appointed, then if they say that the department is appointing number three among those that have been recommended. So the school governing bodies are not even, they're not even called for that or made aware that so-and-so has been appointed because of one and two. Because when you appoint, when you recommend three people, at least as a school governing body, expect that number one will be appointed. So I think now they should be consulted and they should be well capacitated, those in the rural areas. Because they are not like the bodies, the people in the former Model C schools. It is just a comment, my honourable chairperson.
Honourable Chaisa, honourable members, can we allow the National Association for School Governing Bodies? They are here. What they are requesting, they have a presentation together with FEDSAS, but they just want to add 1 point, just a minute for them, so that they don't say we shut them out. National Association for School Governing, just 1 minute so that we continue now with where we have started.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Mzama Ilekata from National Association for School Governing. I agreed to say what FEDSAS, we are working together with FEDSAS and helping together to make everything to happen. Chairperson, I want to put something. That's why yesterday I came here and make sure I must come here and present something. In our presentation, you can see section 31. I don't want to even have section 31 of our presentation. That's where I'm saying, my chair, I want to today to come to in parliament to say that's where the crack of the matter is on our school government. Section 31 and section 23 subsection 12 is where people are governing body have been killed. And I want this parliament today to look on that. That's why I requested my brother say we must talk about that one. Because what is where our school governing body cannot function. Term of office. From their term of office, if your child comes today, tomorrow again, you must leave the office. We must look at that and so on. I thank you, my chairperson. I won't make waste time on that. Thank you, my chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much. Then can we continue, honourable members? Honourable Mavega.
Thank you, chairperson, again.
Let me begin by welcoming all the presentations from all the stakeholders that that are here. Chairperson, as I was listening to the presentations, I am so glad to say that for all the stakeholders, none of them is saying or is trying to protect or to say selling off the post is a good thing to have happened if it happened. There can be differences in terms of approaches and in terms of how they look into the ministerial task team, but the fact of the matter is that they all do not promote that the post be sold, meaning that if that is the case, my take is that we are dealing with one kind of corruption. We know that our country is faced with corruption across all the departments. It's not only basic education that is faced with corruption. As I was listening to Satu, I think I agree that if there are people who were involved in the selling and buying of the post, those should be dealt with as individuals, to say so-and-so has done this, especially if they did that not as observers, so to say, because it's a different when an educator decides to buy a post as an educator or as when is representing the union as an observer and try to cut the corners. But Jefferson, it's so unfortunate that the department is not here, because as I am listening, it all goes back to the basic to the Department of Education to say, why do they allow to be overpowered by the unions, or to be undermined by the unions, or to be captured by the unions, if I may use that famous term these days. The reason I'm saying that is because as I was listening to ELRC, it is very clear that in a process, the unions are not supposed to participate. They've got to go there and observe. But how does it happen that when they are there, knowing very well that they've got an observer status, are allowed to participate and go to an extent of influencing even the results? Because in each and every panel, there is a resource person or a departmental representative. And the responsibility of, as far as I'm concerned, the responsibility of that person is to guide the process and to deal with whoever that is seen to be beginning to cross the line. Should a union representative seen to be trying to influence or participate, why do departmental representatives allow such to happen? So I think that is where the problem lies, Chairperson. But again, having said that, like I said last week in the meeting,
It is very difficult. Yes, we agree that the union SATU has a right of affiliation to be part, to be aligning themselves with the ANC, ANC happening to be the ruling party. But I think somewhere, somehow, that gives SATU members an unfair advantage. Why do I say that? It's because in some places, maybe like where I come from, only SATU members are appointed into senior positions, like circuit managers. If you can take you to where I come from, only SATU members are appointed to be circuit managers, senior positions in the districts. Why? Because this thing of a quota deployment, you'll find that an activist like Dolok will be appointed as a district director. And when he is there, he is then going to allow a situation that is going to allow that members of SATU are appointed. And what is also happening down there is that when they are occupying this senior position, they don't lose their membership with SATU. They remain as SATU members. You find a circuit manager who has been a branch chairperson has been appointed there. And when he's a circuit manager, he will remain captured by the branch executive because they will keep on saying, comrade, we deployed you there. So what we have given you the mandate to ensure that we get all the posts. So if you don't keep with our mandate, we've got the right not to deploy you further and further. You see, that is why I am saying this thing of a cadre deployment, I don't know, because as long as it is, as it is, it will give an unfair advantage, because there is no way a member of a particular union, when you are up there, you will forget about your comrades, about your friends. Because as I'm saying, circuit managers are only SATU members. Does that mean only the members of SATU are too good to be circuit managers, when we know that there are good school principals? Because at some point, Chairperson, you find that some of these people are promoted into senior positions because of failing. You find a principal has failed, his school has been performing badly, there are problems, and for him, instead of for him to be dealt with accordingly, the person you'll find him tomorrow is a circuit manager now. He's taken to the district to occupy, to become a CES or deputy CES. So you begin to ask yourself, do you have to do the wrongs in order to be promoted? The answer is no. And that is killing our education. That is causing problems. That is why we keep on saying our results are going down, because of some of the mistakes that we see happening, but they continue happening because I think maybe the system is allowing and the legislation is allowing that it be like that. That is why I think when there is a scandal like of this one of selling off the post, people are just saying, oh, this is because because the union so and so has bought the post from the SGBs or from the department or whoever is involved in the selling. Otherwise, I don't agree with those who are saying maybe the problem is because some of the SGBs in the rural areas are not capacitated. I don't want to agree with that. Because in the bulletins, when posts are advertised, bulletins are very clear to say how the ICs are to be formed. There is a section that deals with SGBs when they feel they cannot handle. They are allowed to co-opt experts to deal with the that kind of a post. So to say that there are discrepancies because some of the SGBs are not capacitated falls away, because they have to see, or the resource person has to clarify all these things to the SGBs, that this is what we are supposed to be doing. This is the kind of work we need to do. Are we capable? Do we think we can manage? And there is an option to say...
Can you come closer to
thank you, Chairperson. I think I can stop. I can stop there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to all of the stakeholders today for your presentations and making the time to be here today. Time is not going to permit me to respond to every single presentation, so I will be focusing on SACE, SATU and NATU. But before I get on to those particular presentations, I would just like to say that we share the misgivings that many of the presenters here have over the future of school governing bodies and the recommendation about the powers of school governing bodies. We believe that school governing bodies need to be strengthened and not weakened, because school governing bodies can actually play a very important role in holding other entities to account. So our position is that they should be strengthened, not weakened. But we will be dealing with this, I believe, in the Basic Education Laws Amendment Bill, which I am told will be coming before us in the first quarter of next year. Let me get on to the presentation today. SACE, I found your presentation, with all due respect, quite troubling, because surely you must acknowledge, you know, you were at pains to deny links between yourselves and SATU, the dominant union. But you must acknowledge that SATU does dominate SACE by virtue of the number of members from the unions that sit on the council. It is just a fact that 12 of the union representatives on SACE's council are from SATU. So by definition, it must dominate the council. And also you must acknowledge that SATU leads SACE, given that the SACE chairperson is a vice president of SATU, and that you, Mr. Brijraj, you are a former SATU media convener. And, you know, you told us when we met with you 2 weeks ago that you were a proud member of a certain political party which is affiliated with SATU. Now, there's all sorts of conflicts of interest here. So I do think that you must acknowledge that conflict of interest. You cannot pretend that it isn't there or wish it away. And that conflict of interest is actually quite material to this process, because, you know, we saw a parallel investigation conducted by yourselves, but I think calling it an investigation is probably being too generous, because we have the ministerial task team report, which is 285 pages. We have your report, which took even longer to produce than the ministerial task team, and that's just 4 pages long. And in your report, you absolved everybody of wrongdoing. So all the allegations that came to you, you could find no evidence of wrongdoing, whereas the ministerial task team found ample evidence of wrongdoing through their thorough investigation. And we must say that this does provide weight to the allegation that SATU leaned on SACE to either sanitize, delay, or censor your report. So my question to you is this. Why is it that the ministerial task team could find ample evidence of corruption, but you could not? And if you are unable or unwilling to conduct a proper investigation, will you pass on the details of all of the allegations? Because, in fact, the details of those allegations are not contained in your report. You just have findings. findings, everybody's innocent. But you don't talk about the actual allegations. Will you provide those details of the allegations to the forensic team that is currently looking at the other allegations that came out of the ministerial task team report? That is safe. I'm now going to move on to SAT2. Let me just start by taking exception at SAT2's attempts to racialize this issue. You know, corruption is a very, very serious issue in our country, and corruption has no color. This has nothing to do with race. This is about the education of our children, and it is about how corruption can potentially rob our children of a decent education. So we must take very serious exception to your attempts to racialize this issue and to try and divide opinion on this report based on race. Your second contention that you made in your presentation is that we must take exception against, is that you say that the report vindicates SAT2. Now, I really don't know where you get this from, and I think you must be dreaming or you've read a different report. Maybe you're talking about SAIS's report, because that certainly does vindicate SAT2. But the Volmink report does not vindicate SAT2, quite the opposite, in fact. SAT2 is mentioned 694 times in the report. And there's no other union implicated in any of the cases in the report, just SAT2. So every time there was evidence of wrongdoing found, it was involving SAT2 members. I'd just like to say at this point that it is true, I agree with you, that not every SAT2 member is corrupt, and nobody is saying that. I'd also like to say that we believe there are many excellent teachers within SAT2. We think that the problem lies at the level of the leadership of SAT2 and the way that SAT2 has captured the education system. And that's not at the level of individual members. That's at the level of the leadership and the way that the leadership operates. And I'd like to just read from the report. And I think it's very, very important that we get this on record, Chairperson. This is on page 119 of the report. And it is the key, it is, I would argue, the central finding of the report. And it's quite lengthy, so please bear with me, Chairperson, but it's very, very important. It says, the Department of Basic Education has retained semblances of managerial and administrative control in three of South Africa's nine provinces, just three. These are the Free State, the Western Cape, and the Northern Cape. In all other provinces, SAT2 is in de facto control. According to the data given to and gathered by the task team, this domination by a union, that is SAT2, no other union, has been achieved by using combinations of the following ways and means. Number one, through its history as a sector of the liberation movement, by being an industrial and adversarial trade union, by means of its incorporation of office-based educators as members, its use of a repertoire of strategies to coerce teachers, principals, officials, and others to accede to its demands, by using teacher militancy to pressurize its members to be unionist first and professional second. So it's actually, in some cases, your own members who are the victims of this. And that's why we don't tar every member of SAT2 with the same brush, because we know there are many good SAT2 members who are under pressure from the leadership to be militant. Then, by practicing cadre deployment to ensure that high percentages of managers, decision makers, and others with power and influence in education are placed in well-paid positions where they can prioritize the union's interests. Then, by use of undue influence at different stages of the appointments process to ensure that its candidates are appointed, by holding out the possibility for its prominent members to receive opportunity to achieve high office in the department, parliament, and the cabinet, by blocking departmental activities and programs, and I would contend that a key example here is the principal competency test, which has been blocked. I've got one more bullet point. I haven't been as long as my colleague yet.
Yeah, that's why I want you after him, all of you, please.
And lastly, by using its membership of COSATU to influence the members of the Tripartite Alliance. So we'd like to hear from you today, what is your response to these very serious allegations in the report of state capture, a term which, as my colleague said, is very much in vogue at the moment, and probably for good reason, because it is clear that where the state is weak, vested interests move in and they capture the state. And what we are getting from this report is that SAT2 has moved into the vacuum and captured the state for its own interests. So we'd like to hear your response to that allegation. Then lastly, Chairperson, I would just like to respond to Natu's presentation. And I think that NATU have proposed a very, very interesting idea. They have proposed a Judicial Commission of Inquiry. Now, this, I think, was echoed by NATOSA during the deliberations when they responded to the report. And I think even SATU in KwaZulu-Natal has also echoed the call for a Judicial Commission of Inquiry. Now, I don't think it would be a good idea for a Judicial Commission of Inquiry to replace this Ministerial Task Team report. A Judicial Commission of Inquiry could augment and add to this report. But because this report has proved to be very controversial, it's divided opinion amongst unions, amongst probably members on this side of the room, school governing bodies, and we also have misgivings that this report and its recommendations are not going to be taken seriously by the minister for all sorts of reasons, mainly because she is hamstrung by internal politics inside the tripartite alliance. Now, a Judicial Commission of Inquiry, there's lots of merit to it. The one aspect of it which has merit is that it would have power to subpoena witnesses. There will also be less scope for its credibility to be questioned, as some people have questioned the Volmink report. But also importantly, the recommendations of a Judicial Commission of Inquiry will have a far greater weight in law than this report. So we believe there are some excellent reasons to have a Judicial Commission of Inquiry. And I'd like to propose, Chairperson, that we as a committee, that we discuss this further and that we resolve to write to the President to ask him to appoint a Judicial Commission of Inquiry into the selling and buying of teaching posts, as well as the systemic conditions that allow for this kind of corruption to flourish. So, Chairperson, I'd appreciate if we could discuss this further amongst ourselves and to take this idea to the next step. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is not to raise new things or to what is just direct to the report that we got. It is indeed a worthwhile time. It is a worthwhile exercise indeed. I'm sure each and every one of us, as we are sitting here, we have homework to do. Thus, I appreciate the point of Chairperson said when she said that this will not end today. The discussion is continuing. And I also thank the stakeholders for the good reports that they have given to us, presented to us. It shows that really everybody has a concern about these jobs for cash or cash for jobs, something like that. Through the process of the presentations that were made, you, as I am sitting here, I could read in between the lines that there is a conflict of ideas that is well portrayed, and we all agree that the report has loopholes and faults, and we agree that we don't agree with all what is said or recommended. Yeah, mine is just the recommendations. The recommendations are not binding to be taken like that. The point of generalizing the facts is very clear. Whereas the report is clear that only the individuals are implicated, not the organizations or not the structures or associations. The individuals are implicated. So for me, that should be more clarified. Why is it now about organizations or associations that powers should be taken or that should, whereas the report is clear, is about individuals. NATO, I like the concept that said it is clear that MTP has not done its proper work. Because unions were conducted, but their views were neglected. So what? That means something should be done with this report, of which I think it should be at another round. It should follow another round. And NATO says somewhere, no good work done by the task team. I'm sure was your last word of this. You supported this through your whole presentation. And is well supported through the presentation. Thus, I say, recommendations are just recommendations, are not binding. I also failed to understand when I was listening to Satu's presentation, failed to understand that if only 22 members of SATO out of 81 are implicated, why is this report so hula-balooed about SATO? Why is it just SATO? What about the two-thirds of the people implicated in this? On census, as you, I don't know whether we are the umbrella of the SGPs. I wanted just to know, do all the SGPs belong to census or only the selected few? And lastly, I'm your chairperson. It's just a question of just an explanation. I understand the concern of SGP, noting that they also want to sit in ELRC. I said no. The mere fact that is ELRC, that E means for educators, except another way around can be done to rectify the concept of ELRC. Thank you, Fetchers, for saying do not destroy the democratic structure because of some individual deeds. Why not dealing with one? My chairperson is just comments on reports, not adding new. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Person. Honorable Mkoto.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to thank the delegations for the time and effort to come to the meeting, and also the presentations that they made. They were very insightful. Chairperson, I think also I want to thank the minister and the department for being very responsive in ensuring that they are able to take up a matter that just started as an allegation in the media. There was no report that was on the table of the department, I would suppose, but the minister, in being accountable and responding to issues that she knows affect her sector, she took it upon herself to make sure that she must put the finger on the problem by instituting that investigation. We all understand that we are all human beings, and to err is human. And we don't want to say that the minister made a mistake by appointing the ministerial task team. We also do not want to say that the ministerial task team was wrong in doing that, which they have already done and of which we are discussing now. Like the chairperson has already highlighted that this is a mission that we have to adopt as stakeholders in the sector to make sure that we are correcting the system, the flaws that are there, the weaknesses that are there. Because for us as members of parliament, we do oversight on policy. And I think it became relevant when the task team also gave us a recommendation on what to correct in the system, what is lacking and what needs to be, you know, reviewed in terms of the law and the policies and regulations for the department. So there is nothing wrong for me, for the task team to even go and tell us some of the issues that really are not irrelevant, because we are talking about posts and there is no way that you can talk about the policies that governs employment, promotion and all the labor related issues. So I think they were correct. And I want to say, Chairperson, also, because I have noted with concern that the report is being politicized, and there is a strong possibility, Chairperson, that we might lose sight of the fact that there are challenges within the system. And you cannot be exonerated as stakeholders, like the school governing bodies, the labor unions, because all of you are players, key players at that level. And if we start politicizing this thing, talking about issues of balance of forces within the sector, political balance of forces, I think that matter, Chairperson, maybe we must leave it for outside of this house, for the political parties to go and contest who is dominant and who is not, and where are you dominant and where are you not. So if we can go back, some of the things that are also talked about on the report, the issue of cater deployment, it's not happening for the first time in South Africa that there is cater development deployment. Even during apartheid, there was job reservation for the poor people, for the people of color. So we can't come here and pretend that some of the things are starting. So, Chairperson, that is why I'm suggesting that let's take the politics out of this debate and look at the issues. And the recommendations are there to look at. My question maybe is what relates to the issue of, like, if you look at the presentation of SATU and you hear other presenters like NATU as well, some of the people were saying, some of the unions were saying that they did not get a chance to for their input to be reflected in the presentation. And also there were members who were not aware of the process. I just wanted to check whether this has been reported to the chairperson of the portfolio or to the minister, that before the release, even the release, because this has been a public matter for a very long time. It was in the newspaper before even the minister presented or highlighted that there's going to be a ministerial task team. Those allegations, that's where we started. Have you reported the fact that you were being excluded now too? And even the inputs that you made were not made available? Because I thought that when the ministerial task team invited to meetings as stakeholders, it becomes your responsibility to go back to your members and notify them, rather than casting an aspersion or coming up with a premeditated approach or view that the report is likely to be, biased. The other point that I wanted to talk to Chairperson is whether there are workshops, because these members that are yours, do you train them on the legislation and policies of government? Because it becomes an issue that when we go to the constituencies, you find that some of the union members of your various unions do not understand some of the policy issues that govern the department where they are working. So are there workshops that you are doing? How do you make sure that your members understand the legislation, the policies of the department, and how to fully implement them? There are so many things, like even the improvement plans of the schools are not happening, but they belong to unions, and the department gives unions, and even the SGV associations and forums, the funding to execute those responsibilities of training. How do you make sure that we get the benefit of that, or the value for the money that we have invested on that exercise? Chairperson, the other point is that also to Nadu, is whether it's possible for you to give us a presentation of those recommendations that you made that were not considered, because I've seen that SATU has highlighted them in their report. And then also wanting to check your view on the recommendation, because you did not say a single statement on whether you agree with or disagree with the recommendations that have been tabled. Chairperson, thank you.
So much, Honorable Ngoto. Honorable Osho.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to all the stakeholders for their presentation. If I may ask, we are going to be given a second round, because that will lead me in phrasing my question. Because I cannot carry on if we don't have a second round.
You cannot begin if you are not going to get a second round.
I can't say anything, because I have to get a response before I can ask the question. Okay, so we are going to get a second round. Thank you, Chair. I have to reiterate what my colleague, Honourable Davis, said. SACE, I have in all my life not seen a nonsensical report like this. I cannot believe what has been presented to us. And I also find it difficult to see any trustworthiness or credibility in this report. And I would just like to ask the task team, and that's why I need to get the response before I ask my follow-up question. I need a background information on every member of this task team before I ask the next question. So if we do get another round, or are they allowed to respond now?
Honorable Kosa.
Thank you, Chairperson. We welcome all the presentations. And out of all the presentations from the unions, there is no doubt that the credibility, reliability, and trustworthiness of the report is, you are on the very same par in terms of challenging the processes that were followed in terms of the ministerial task team. Having said that, it also problem in my mind that towards when the presentations were unfolding, it would appear as if we are losing sight of the fact that we're challenging that the trustworthiness of this report, that there are flaws in the report. We tend to forget about it and try to focus on certain individuals in terms of being found wrong in the process. But I want to acknowledge the first stance on finding nothing wrong with the systems, but the people that are involved in wrongdoing, as the people that are supposed to be corrected, that we deal with the attitude of people. We really welcome that one. But we have also to mention that it was also a concern, the issues of communications with the union's membership. But I want to believe that if a union is consulted and the communication was given to the union, it is also on equal instance the responsibility of the union to consult its members and make them aware that there is this that is happening. So come forward if there is any information that can assist us as the union. So we cannot say it is only the responsibility of the department that it was supposed to be writing a circular to all the teachers in South Africa. I think on that instance, I think equally so, we can be able to say that you had a role as unions too. There was also a concern that it would seem as if we lose track of the constitution, because I think everyone has got a constitutional right for the freedom of association. And I don't want to believe that there is somebody who do not belong or associate himself with a certain organization, be it a non-organization, a non-profit organization or any organization. So in that, I find it very strange that we can question the appointment of certain individuals in certain positions, because they've got the constitutional right to be appointed. Each and every person has got a constitutional right to be appointed. So I find it very strange that we can be able to look at that as if it's only, if it happens that people from the very same sector or from the very same union, if they were lucky to be appointed, I don't see anything wrong, because it is their constitutional right to be appointed. Coupled with that is the strength of the unions. We cannot be able to challenge the strength of the union, because it depends on how do you recruit yourself as a union that you can be able to have and win more members. So I agree with the notion, Chair, that with regard to the SGB, it doesn't seem as if all is bad with the SGBs. Even in the rural areas that we are speaking about, there are SGBs that are very effective in terms of the processes of interviews. Let us not make a mistake in terms of that, as if in rural areas we don't have people who are capable. There are. But we cannot be able to deny and say there are not SGBs who are not up to scratch in terms of the processes and the like. These are the weaknesses that are within an individual. Be it the person that is got an education, but if he is morally weak, then we cannot be able to say that the SGB can be successful in terms of that. So I want to agree that we cannot be able to support the fact that the powers of the SGBs can be taken away in terms of, but we'll be able to say some of the SGBs where there's no capacity in terms of running the processes, they have to be well informed by whosoever is deployed to be a resource person, that you cannot be equal to the task beforehand, so that they can be ready to request for assistance from outside. So with me, I'm very pleased with all the presentations that I hear. I can find it very strange that some of the presentations are challenged on the basis of saying they did not do what I wanted as an individual. But nevertheless, because people have got rights, they have to do that. But the presentations were... You gave yourself time to do the presentation coming here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Can I also throw some on the things that you would love to respond to? Oh, you didn't speak.
For the first time, honorable Padilla.
Chair, 2 days, then I'll write you later. Chair, thank you, and thank you to all our stakeholders present today. I'll be very brief, and I would really like to start off to say that I don't think we have an issue with unions or their existence. Definitely not. What we have or ever have a problem with, if we go beyond the most basic of our terms of reference. And I will include things like the following, and that is when our observer status is abused, especially during interviews. You cannot, as far as I know, unions are there to make sure the conditions of the members are okay, and that they are being treated fairly. But there's something else in education beyond teachers. They are actually our children and the future of our country. I think that's important, and I find that very often unions forget about that. Something else is that in this report, for those who haven't read it, there are only a number, and SATU did refer to only 7 cases, but we all know that there were more than 7 cases. And yes, people didn't come with all the proof, and yes, people are scared, because people are human. We know that people get killed, you know, or they get intimidated, or put down a list very low, never to get a job again. So we must understand that there is much more than only in this MTT report. Chair, something else that's really bothering is that, and all the unions must take note, is the interference. If you are serious about the education of our children, you cannot interfere during school teaching hours. It's got to stop. It's forever happening. You cannot hold a meeting when your member should be in the classroom teaching our children. They have rights too, by the way. Now, Chair, I often worry, as my focus area is mainly on infrastructure, I never hear the unions go on as much over the conditions in the classrooms, the water, sport fields, safety, sick rooms, therapists, all of those things that has an influence on your members. Chair, I would also like to say that with reference to SGBs, and I've said it recently at a committee meeting, you know, especially in the far rural areas, deep rural areas of our country, and we all know that education is now a society issue. We've got to involve our communities, our parents. They never had the same opportunities, many of them. So there should never be interference by a union, which are happening, or is happening when SGBs are being elected. But we should also tap on what FETSA said on their offering and the letter attached in their documentation. We should all learn from one another. You always take a model that's working and you use it, and later on you can amend it to suit your personal circumstance at your school better. But this thing of denying others, you know, documents, we're denying our communities for getting better. And sometimes I wonder if we're not on purpose not educating our communities, because it serves our goals and intentions better. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let me protect two unions for this one. But it shows that as the members of this committee, we want to hear more on your contributions, on what you are doing to enhance the system. But really, let me protect you for saying we do not hear you talking on more of the issues. It was not for today, but it's just an indication as to say, as the portfolio committee, we believe we are in this journey together. The department cannot operate without your assistance. So it's an indication that in the near future, again, we'll request you to come to us as the labor unions, just to share with us even your contributions towards the betterment of the, and the development of our teachers and the betterment of the system as such. But really for that one, it was just to prove the interest that we have as a committee on what we are doing as a union, because we fully agree that there is a critical role that you need to play in the system, and that is what we love to hear as time goes on. Again, what I want to add is, from the report and the presentations that you have just received today, it shows clearly, and we have discussed this with the department, as to say, one other thing that we can conclude on is, from the report, we can't stand here and say the system is wrong, as it has been highlighted even in the presentation. But what we agree upon, I think all of us, is to say we do have policies, but we do have individuals that do not want to comply, you know. That's the thing that we all need to look at, as to say, what is it as we're playing this critical role in the system? What is it that together we can do to make sure that when the policies are there, let us have negotiations, but let us see people implementing and adhering to the policies that are there. It's nice to listen to, as a committee, we are privileged because we have sat with the MTT, we have sat with the department, what now with you as stakeholders. For us, it's so good now to we have interacted with all these very important role players, and I think, honourable members, it was a good step that you took to invite all these stakeholders, because it will give us more insight now as to say, when we meet the department again, you know, we don't get as a third person reporting to us, but we got it from you as to say, what are your contributions? Because for me, what it says today, we have learned, we know now what is happening. We need to come back. We have heard the recommendations from the MTT, notwithstanding all the flaws and the shortcomings that might be there. But as we have said, with the recommendation, it's a springboard for all of us as to say, yes, there are things that you can take from the recommendations together with the department, because that is where we need to go to. These are the things that we can take as we have supported some of them and even added on the issues and some of the things that the MTT did not touch on, what we need to do and what we encourage to see as a committee, of which we cannot be part to, I know, where we can see such an open discussion with you, all stakeholders, on this recommendation with the department, with the minister herself, because we believe from that meeting, that is where we are going to see the changes and also your commitments as all the role players. SGP, tell us what you are going to do on these recommendations, and the minister can hear. But as a committee, we are going to be making follow-up on that. We want to see this report with all, as I'm saying, with all the flaws and the shortcomings that might be there, but it has given us a platform to work from and say, how do we grow from here? So thank you very much for that. Says, as you respond, for me, it's very important, again, from even the way that we have asked some questions, and we have always done that even from the side of the committee. Tell us, how do you constitute essays? We know that it's professional basis and so forth, because this issue of dominance will always come up, and we must know exactly how essays constituted so that as we understand well, you know, why are we having 12 members of ISAR 2 and 2, you know, because really, if we keep on drilling on the issue of dominance and what, maybe we as a committee, there is a point that you are missing, as to say, Why are they there? Why? What about other unions? But I think on the last meeting that we had, the deputy chairperson did speak to that. But if ever you get a chance, do speak to us so that some of the questions cannot keep on coming, whereas we have touched on these things. And the issue, ELFC, the issue of unfair labor practice, if that is how really we take it, for the fact that we are saying most of the senior position posts are taken by SATU. For me, it says, surely there is an unfair labor practice there, and that is your role. What are you playing? Yes, we are still going to be hearing from the unions as to say, why are you dominating? Why you are dominating? But SGBs, again, we are going to be hearing from you as to say, why do you allow yourselves to be dominated like that? You are there, you should play your part. Again, from the discussions and the report, it shows that you also allow yourself, it can be the issue of capacitation, that is what we are going to be talking about. But again, from our side, honorable members, to generalize saying the SGBs in the rural areas are not up to scratch, I think again we are overgeneralizing. We come from the rural areas. I'm not saying I know more about education, but if I sit in that governing body, you cannot generalize and say the SGBs from the rural areas are not capacitated. Let us look at the exact issue. Where is the problem? How are you? Are we assisting the whole system? But because this generalization is not going to assist us on a serious note, but let me allow. We had a list when we started. We started with LRC. Can we follow that list? So that we give each and everyone a space to respond. I'm not saying you respond directly to what has been raised, but yes, you respond and even suggest more in correct way you feel you need to say something. LRC, you were the first to come in. We're not giving you 10 minutes now, as we did at first. 4 minutes will be fine for your responses to this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think as a custodian of fair labor practices, we appreciate the comments made by the committee in recognizing the supremacy of the constitution of the land. Because for us, it's very important that when we reflect on some of the issues, we don't lose sight of what is provided for in the constitution. The member seated over there did mention the fact that they are not downplaying the rights as enshrined in the Constitution. But Chairperson, if in responding in particular to the question that you have directed to the ELRC and also reflecting to some of the inputs made by the speakers, I think it will be a bit of unsettling to ourselves as the organization charged with the responsibility of ensuring that there are fair labor practices, to sit back and see a situation where applicants to positions are either offered or not offered employment on the basis of their political affiliation. Because the Bill of Rights guarantees everyone freedom of association, a right to belong to a political organization, and a right to fair labor practices. Now, if you look on both sides of the coin, whether you belong to a dominant union or to a non-dominant union, if you meet the requirements of the job, you cannot be discriminated against on the basis of the fact that you belong to a dominant union, you are affiliated to a federation that is supporting the ruling party. Therefore, if the head of department of each province that reports to the MEC, which happens to be, we know for a fact that Western Cape is not the case, but all other 8 provinces, they are governed by the same ruling party. Therefore, if an applicant applies, we are of the view as the LRC that the process should be regulated as provided for in PEM and the collective agreements, regardless of whether the person belongs to this union or that union. Chairperson, it applies to the office-based educators as well. The ELRC processes regulates also the appointment of the office-based educators in relation to the district directors, the circuit officers, DCS, and so forth. We therefore would not want to comment on whether the appointments or those that are appointed happens to be coming from SATU in particular, because we are aware that even in some cases there are other officials that are appointed who are not necessarily from SATU. But our role is limited to us ensuring that the process is free and fair. Unlike the appointment of the public protector, an individual who has an interest cannot be affiliated to a political organization. Appointment of educators, being it school-based or office-based, there is no such a requirement. And I think, Chairperson, there are reasons for such, because education cannot be categorized as an area wherein rights of individuals should be overlooked when people are appointed. That is, Chairperson, responding to the question that you posed directly to the ELRC. And again, as the ELRC, as I said in my presentation, within the few minutes that you have allocated to me now, we are saying we can't turn a blind eye. Where there is smoke, there is fire. We can't turn a blind eye that, indeed, even if the problem is with the individuals who are charged with the responsibility of doing or ensuring that the process is fair and free. If there are these allegations, it requires all of us to introspect and reflect and see how do we enhance the process such that we avoid these things happening. And also in my presentation, I made mention of the fact that corruption does not take place in the process itself. It takes place outside the process. One can draw an analogy about the corruption in tenders or in contracts. The supply chain officials that influence the process, they don't do that in the bid adjudication. That is done outside the process. What becomes important for the LRC insofar as the procedural and substantive fairness is to ensure that if you come forward with a claim or an allegation that I was not appointed, you need to prove that you met the requirements. You were the best candidate. The candidate that has been appointed was not better than yourself. That to us is the key issue, not whether posts are sold or they are not sold. I'll pause there, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just take 2 minutes or so and allow my colleagues a minute each. Chairperson, this question of the dominance of SAIS comes over and over. And just to repeat, SAIS has a 30-member council, as the Act of 2031 of 2000 states we should have. And of those, you find 18 members have to come from the organized teaching profession. That is what the Act states. The other 12 members, of course, are made up from different stakeholder groupings, 5 of whom actually come from the minister. The organized teaching profession have taken it upon themselves to share those 18 seats. And the tradition has been that they allocate it more or less in line with the seats they have at the ELRC, roughly. So it has been agreed in the last council again that SATU would get 12 and the others would be shared with the smaller unions. When we have elections next year again and setting up a new council, it will be up to the organized teaching profession to see how it will share the seats. So that is where we are bound by constitution, to have it in the way it is. And in terms of the SATU influence, now while Ms. Veronica is our present chairperson, it's important, Chair, to note that our previous chairpersons, as I've stated in the report, have come from other unions. The SAOU chaired this council twice. NAPTOSA chaired this council. Its deputy chair presently is the president of SAOU, its present deputy chair, who is in this house. It had a vice deputy chair that came from NATU. So we find that the officials have been rotating. And the fact that I am singled out as coming from SATU, I suppose anybody else who would have become a CEO or will become a CEO will come with some history. I don't think there is a human being that won't come with any history. But the important thing is that we act impartially, which I think we have tried to do very much. Chair,
it's I think a difficulty that we have many times with a majoritarian democracy. You know, our democracy works on the principle of majoritarianism. And maybe there are some of us that have difficulty with that. The other point, Chair, I want to make quickly is the question of the report about our 4 pages as compared to 285. SAIS has not got any instruction or commission to issue any report to anybody. It's just volunteered so that it doesn't turn a blind eye to this phenomenon to set up its team. In fact, it had no reason even to set up the team. But because it was having so much of exposure, it set up a team. Normally, it puts one or two investigators to go check case by case. And all we do is report publicly when teachers are found guilty of the breach of code of conduct. That is what SAIS traditionally does. It doesn't produce reports on the way it goes about its work. But I must say that we have no difficulty in giving whatever evidence we have to any quarter. There is no problem with that. And if there is request for more evidence, we will give the same, more than what we have, if it is at all possible. We are not absolving educators. We wait up till this day. And I am surprised that there is substantive evidence for regarding 8 educators or whatever, and the MTT has not sent that to us. And I think it is well known in this country, if there is any problem with any educator regarding professional misconduct, it should go to SAIS. So it's surprising an entity of the standing of the MTT has not submitted that information to us. And we wait for that information. We will follow that up, Chair. Before I hand over, Chair, I must express a little disturbance that I have. I find it very hurtful that in this august chamber, we speak of a nonsensical report. Now, Chair, I wish for this House to clarify, either today or at some point, what is it that is contained in the report is nonsensical, other than editorial corrections that have to be made, so that we can fix that up. Chair, if that is not forthcoming, Chair, then I'm afraid, as SAIS, we will have to look for relief on this matter. We cannot not comment when a report is referred to as nonsensical. SAIS will have to interact with that matter until it is satisfied. It is a matter that I shall take back to my counsel, and we shall see how we can get relief on that matter, Chair. But let me hand over quickly to my colleagues for some details. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I'm just going to quickly answer on two things that whilst we were having conversations or meeting with the MTT, which we did a couple of times, we did refer cases that we felt need further investigation to them. Chair, I think what will be important also to ascertain is that when the report was finally came out, we didn't have an opportunity of coming back and seeing whether any forensic information from the cases that we referred to the MTT, which is a pity that they will not be here to try and assist into saying what, because after they came to introduce themselves to us, SAIS, we were with them, we worked with them a couple of times, we shared notes on what we're picking up, because there were times where we'll all be in KZN. So from our side, there was a way of us working with the MTT to ensure that whatever we get and they need to augment on, we were giving them through. With the members of the task team, Chair, they were chaired by Mr. Geza, who is our sitting in the Ethics Committee, and he is the ministerial appointee by the Council. Mr. Magalela alternated with Mr. Geza in the Mount Fletcher investigation because he is one of our panelists, and Mr. Geza could not make it. He was in court on that day. Ms. Mangotwe is one of our investigators in the cases of labor relations. Then it was myself and Mr. Sandile Njalinjade, who is assistant manager in our Ethics Department. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks. Just to reiterate, remember SAIS is made up of SGB members, NAISA, organized labor, Department of Higher Education, and DBE. So, and it is structured in different committees. So the ethics committee in SAIS is not even led by our chairperson. It is actually led by a deputy chairperson who is not a member of SATU. Members of the committee are mixed. All the committees report back to an EXCO, and EXCO reports back to council. So I think things are pretty well structured and spread amongst different unions and different different interested bodies. Also to say that our investigators, they've gone through screening. There's even increased training that's happened. We've invited all organized labor to submit names where we want to increase our investigation pool. And no case has ever been squashed. There's been no directive, if you go back to our council minutes or to our EXCO minutes, and I'm sure even the ethics minutes, that will say that a case has just been put by the wayside. That's something that the council monitors quite strictly. So I just hope that assists.
Thank you. Can I apologize on behalf of the committee? Really, I did not pick up the member saying a reporter says was nonsensical. I would have apologized from that time, of which really I can't remember. I'm not sure. As directly saying the report was nonsensical, but if it was so, really, I don't know how I should have missed that. Yes, I did hear the part of nonsensical report, of which I thought it was a generic, you know, comment. But really, honourable members, I'm not sure whether I missed that or not. But let me not open up for that. That is why I say, if ever there is a member who said that, even as myself as chair, if I did not pick that up, it was a mistake. I don't want to open that, honourable members. But if it was directly to say it's a nonsensical report from one of the stakeholders, really that will be an uncalled for language, of which I will talk about it later. Let me close it there.
Sorry, Chair,
like
can
that.
I just take a point of order on this, please?
No, it can't be a point of
order. No, but I want to know on how you can justify trying to shut down a member of the committee when they are just giving their opinion. It's free speech in this House. And if we believe that the report is nonsensical and we want to say it's nonsensical, then we have the right to say it's nonsensical, and you can't stop us from saying that.
That language is not acceptable. There's a report they worked on. You might say you don't agree with the content of the report. So say it's nonsensical, it's just a language that is unheadful. But then if you emphasize that you said it, it's fine, then we will take it, we know that you say, but it was not on behalf of the committee. If you say it's nonsensical, really, as the committee, we cannot allow that, as to say, you say the report was nonsensical. You might not agree on the content. As you are busy discussing the issue of the content of the MTT, we might not agree on everything that is there, but to come and say it's a nonsensical report, really, that is uncalled for, and we have to apologize for that.
Chair, we're not asking you to agree. We're just asking for the right to be respected, that we have free speech in this committee. That's all we're asking for.
I do agree with that, with you there. We have a free speech in this committee, but to use the language that is uncalled for, it's something that
can we also speak?
No.
Is this how things are done?
No.
Can I just stop you there?
I think I've managed with that one. It's something that was an unacceptable language, honourable members and our stakeholders. That one, really, we fully apologize on that one. It's something that we can take it later. Can we go to Satu?
Thank you, Chair. I think we want to agree, Chair, to say that it was wrong for members of the portfolio committee, which sometimes we want to believe they are honorable. I don't know whether there is anything honorable if they can come up and say something like that reports are nonsensical. And I'm convinced, I'm expressing my view here. I'm appearing in front of this committee for the first time. I've watched Parliament on TV and things that are happening. But for a member of the portfolio committee to say a particular report is nonsensical is wrong. Whether there's a freedom of speech or what is wrong. It borders to undermining, and I want to say this, it borders to racial attitudes as well. Yes. Well, let's try and respond, Comrade Chair.
Chairperson?
We are not sure in terms of time, because we have only 4 minutes to respond on. But we want to reiterate our position,
can
Chair.
Can you stop, sir? Yes, Honourable Davis, what are you saying?
Chairperson, I find it a little bit disturbing that you want to protect faith when my colleague says that their report is nonsensical.
I'm not protecting.
But you won't protect. You won't protect
Honourable
members.
Honourable Davis,
of,
can I
let me finish,
you?
Please,
No, Honourable Davis. I'm not correcting.
Chair, let me finish.
I was talking on the issue of the language that we have used, as to say what is entailed in the report. Really, I can't support them. But what is wrong must be clear. Said it's wrong. You can't be saying.
Okay,
that.
Chair, let me finish. Let me finish.
Let's put order, Comrade Chair. Yeah. I think there's a dialogue that is happening.
No, no, no.
We need to order that.
You want to protect SAIDS from the language of us calling their report nonsensical, but you won't protect members when an entity arrives at this house and starts throwing around racial language and starts making racial allegations. Then you keep quiet. Why are you not protecting us from that?
Davis. I allowed everyone to finish speaking, then even the issue of nonsensical language, that is what I did. Did you want me to stop and jump and say, keep quiet? That is what we always say. The manner which you want to run the meeting cannot be the manner that I want or that anyone who comes with the report. So it's very much disturbing to want to drive the meeting the way you want it to. It cannot just be. Honorable Ma'am Godu.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think maybe we should reflect on this matter because it is very uncalled for members of the DA to, when we have invited stakeholders to come and brief us on a particular matter, and instead of, you know, engaging constructively on issues, they start vilifying or undermining the integrity of those members. So I think it's really unparliamentary because we can't call people here and abuse them. So I think the members of the DA, they are not reflecting what we are as a committee.
On a point of order, Madam Chair.
It's not a reflection of what we feel.
On a point of order.
We can disagree on issues.
Honourable members, allow me. Let me give Honourable Boshoff one chance, then we continue. We'll tackle these issues when we are alone. Yes, what's your point of order?
Thank you, Chair. Not at any point in time was I referring to a person, as Honourable Mokota is saying. I was referring to the report. And it is semantics that we are speaking of here. You call it a report that doesn't make sense. I call it nonsensical. It's exactly the same thing.
Thank you. The report is written by a person. Thank you so much. Can we continue, Honourable Members?
Thank you very much.
You are on the platform. Can you respond to the questions that have been raised to you?
But the times of a garden boys has passed. We can't be called here to be insulted. We are no longer garden boys of the DA. Chair, we want to reiterate our position as SATU that we condemn the selling of post, if ever there is any selling of post. And very quickly, because of time, we want to reiterate what has been said, even yourself, you have echoed it, to say that it is wrong to assume that by virtue of living in rural areas and by virtue of being illiterate, you are therefore corrupt. And say that and brush all the SGBs, that SGBs are corrupt simply because they are illiterate or they are from the rural areas. I don't think that is correct. Hence, we as such, we are also supporting the view that you can't interfere, you rather strengthen the SGBs. Whether in terms of capacity or whatever, we agree in terms of ensuring that SGBs are strengthened and capacitated. And from what Davis, you can't even call the President of the country Honourable, and you ask me to call Davis Honourable. I will not. I'm not even a Member of Parliament.
Satu. Satu.
Satu. Satu.
No, no, no.
We want to reiterate, Chair.
Can you listen to me, Satu? Can you switch off your mic? Good people who are in Parliament here, can we abide by the rules of Parliament? Maybe it's one rule that I did not put in front. The language that we use really
we must use a parliamentary language. The issue of race, it's one thing that we always put aside in parliament and do not allow it. And also when we are addressing, really just to respect for this hour that is left, can I plead with you, you use either honourable or Mr. We don't have a problem, Mr. or Miss or Mrs. You can use that. Just to show that respect, please. That is what I'm pleading from you. Continue, sir.
I apologise, Chair, to you and the members of the committee, as well as the stakeholders. We want to respond to what Mr. Davis said. That Sathu is dominating the council. I don't think he was listening properly. And we can't have members of parliament again using common sense to say that by virtue of Sathu being in majority in terms of the 18 that is occupied by labor unions, therefore Sathu is dominating. I think it's very wrong. It cannot be supported with any empirical evidence. It cannot be supported with any logic. I think a very good report by SAIS was clear to say that decisions at SAIS are arrived at by consensus. There is not even voting. Now, it then undermines the other teacher unions and other stakeholders that are there in SAIS to say that when decisions are arrived at by consensus, it is because Sathu is dominating or bullying them. It's very wrong. It's a very wrong narrative that is created about Sathu. Sathu is a professional union, and it has got people that are professional and people that are capable to engage. We don't strive or survive through bullying or dominance, which is unnecessary. Members of Parliament want to encourage you to read, research, so that when you come to Parliament to contribute, you have information. You don't just use common sense.
In no way that you are referring to the members of Parliament as using common sense.
I'm referring to the member of Parliament that raised this. Sathu, again, we believe that the attitude, which we said earlier on in our presentation, that the attitude and the narrative that is created against Sathu in particular borders to racial attitudes. We want to maintain that. And it's a narrative that is going around in the country that we are observing. And all of us here are the stereotypes that we must be able to fight against. To say that anything that is black, therefore, must be branded as corrupt, simply because Sathu is predominantly black in terms of members. There are other races in Sathu, but dominant members are black, and therefore Sathu will be branded as a corrupt organization. I think it's something that even members of parliament and members of the portfolio committee must be able to assist to fight those stereotypes. I think in our presentation we did indicate that out of 81 cases, only 7 cases that the MTT recommended that people have cases to answer. People have cases to answer, and it does not say those people are guilty. It is saying people have cases to answer. Such cases must be taken to enforcement agencies and so forth for further investigation and action to take place. On the basis of the 7 people, you therefore cannot judge Sathu as an organization and say Sathu is generally corrupt and Sathu is selling post as it has been said here. If members of parliament, Mr. Davis, is interested in education and the education of our children, which we appreciate, and I think as such we also have an interest in ensuring that our children are educated, why then they get excited by these negative things of post-selling and what have you? We have never heard them being excited about language in schools. We are calling for such for the development of indigenous languages so that our black children are not disadvantaged in terms of instructions at the level of the classroom. Because other children are advantaged because English is first language at school. Hence, when they are being assessed in exams, they are advantageous as compared to the African children. We have never heard them. We have never heard them being excited about that, Chair.
Honourable Satu, can you stick to the report?
I am responding.
I did promise that as a committee, we are very much interested even to have another engagement with all these stakeholders, so where we can open up and talk on the things, the progressive things, transformational things that are taking our education system forward. So can I just stop you there? Stick to the questions that were raised, directed to you, and
thank you.
To the report. You only have 2 minutes left.
The Deputy General Secretary, when presenting on behalf of SATU, indicated that the report vindicates SATU. We want to reiterate that. And there is nowhere in the report where it says SATU is selling post. But a wrong impression is given deliberately for political grandstanding and political scoring to say that SATU is a selling post. We will just want to request Mr. Davis to go and read the report. There is nowhere in the report where it says SATU sold post. We agree there may be individuals who may be members of SATU who have been implicated by the report. And we want to reiterate our stance to say that action must be taken against those individuals. They must be taken to our law enforcement agencies. We agree with that because we don't support corruption as such as well. Hey, Chair, USATU can't be blamed for being a majority organization. The fact that we are a majority, it means that we worked as an organization, we have recruited. And teachers, they have a reason to join SATU, and therefore we cannot be blamed by that. We have not captured the Department of Education as SATU. And I think we have submitted a report to the MTT, and we still have it if people are interested, that indicates the officials of the Department of Education as to which unions they belong to. And you'll be surprised that SATU has not... does not have the majority of officials as they are claiming. To say that USATU has actually captured the Department of Education, we have not. And it is not our intention to capture it. Our intention and our brief is to defend our members and protect our members and ensure that there is labor peace and also there is quality education for our children. No, I'm not done. Cater deployment, we want to speak about it. It's not something new. And it cannot be raised now. I wonder whether your PA is an ANC member, because you can't employ an ANC member yourself. I wonder how many in the cabinet of Western Cape are non-DA members. Now, before 1994, the apartheid government...
There is a point of order. Stop there. Yes?
We are not sticking to what is to be discussed. We are moving off the point and we are wasting our time.
Cater deployment is there in the report and it was exciting then.
Finish up that on cater development and stick to the report.
Even during apartheid, the apartheid government, through the Burden Bond, will even appoint people with matric to be registered at universities. Nobody was making noise, nobody is referring it today, it was cadre deployment. And we therefore cannot talk about cadre deployment if and only it should. We agree that people that must be appointed, whether it's HODs, deputy principals and educationists at the level of the district must be qualified. They must meet the requirements, have necessary qualifications and what have you. They must therefore prove, because there is nothing in the report that says that SATU members who are in position don't qualify. They have the required minimal experience, they have qualifications in terms of the laws and collective agreements in this country. Therefore, you cannot blame SATU members for representing themselves better at the level of the interviews. We train our SATU members. We train them, they know law, they know legislation, they know policies of the Department of Education. That is why in interviews, they perform better. They are capable. members. And Chair, references to the report was made in terms of start to coercing members, cater deployment.
No, Satchel, let me stop you there. I know the time won't be allowing us, but I think we have responded to a bulk of questions and just the comments that were raised. Can I move to Naptosa?
No, Satchel still wants to speak.
No. Naptosa?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be brief. Madam Chair, one of the difficulties of the report in terms of Naptosa's view is, of course, that by nature the reporting will be anecdotal and that evidence is very difficult to come by in reports such as this. And that will forever make it very difficult to come to a point where we recognize exactly who perpetrators are, etc. And that is the weakness of the entire report. Because, to the best of my knowledge, nobody hands out receipts when sheep and goats change hands for reports, etc. That's the bottom line. So it's going to be anecdotal, and we will acknowledge that. That there is some rot, but we must also acknowledge. However, I do need to just make two or three points. First of all, the point has been made about governing bodies. There are good and bad governing bodies all over. Some of the best and some of the worst are in our Model C schools. We can't always just create the impression that if it says former Model C, it's exceptional. It's not true. And if you've been in the rural areas, some of the people with the greatest integrity serve on those governing bodies. They may not be well educated, they may not even have anything that they call possessions, but they have integrity, and that is what we have discovered. So we are saying it's too broad a generalization. To move on, insofar as the whole issue of cadre deployment is concerned, it is the entitlement that is the bigger issue, and how people have misused and become entitled. And that is where Naptosa members have felt the brunt of this. To just address myself to one of the honourable members who spoke about the union's lack of expressing themselves on issues like infrastructure, etc., I would hazard to say that maybe the member has missed some of these things. Because in fact we have, in great detail, even before the modern era, where, and I'm saying modern as in recent years, where certain organizations have taken that over. We have raised it because our members are there. We've walked through the rivers with members so that they could demonstrate to us the indignity of having to cross a stream to get to school to teach. And I would gladly give some of this material over. Finally, the importance for Naptosa is not how the report has been concluded now, but rather what we are going to do to prevent the scenario from arising again. We know that the recommendations are flawed in itself for all the good reasons that have been mentioned. But how do we stop it now? Because I don't certainly want to come back here again in another few years to talk about the same problem. I want to know that having spent all the time and energy and money probably too, we are now going to look at the road ahead to try and stop the rot. And that is what Naptosa also conveyed to the Minister of Basic Education. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Naptosa, for that. As I owe you, they're rushing for the flight. They've just gone out. Natu?
Well, thank you very much, Chair. We just want to address a couple of issues that were raised by honourable members. Firstly, our presentation was designed to express our frustration to the members of the portfolio committee. We are very sorry perhaps if it was conceived as if it's political. We had no intention of taking that kind of a route, but our main intention is to expose problems that our members are faced with out there. And secondly, the worry that we are having is that as we speak, we are speaking now, we have office-based positions, over 3,000-4,000 that have been advertised in the system of education as we are speaking. Different provinces, we have school-based positions, principalship, deputy principalship, that are advertised. And the process, the machinery, in fact, is the process is going on. And that is why we felt that we should come and express to the portfolio committee that if comprehensive job is not being done when dealing with issues of selling of post, this problem is still going to remain with us for a very long time. Hence, we want the portfolio committee to know that as we are speaking in different provinces, we have thousands and thousands of senior positions that have been advertised. So if there is nothing that is being done to address and to arrest the problem, which means we are having different people in different corners who are celebrating that. The ministerial task team never had an opportunity of getting the things that they did in terms of selling the post, in terms of forcing people to buy the post, in terms of trying to intercept processes of appointment. We want the members, our members, who are playing a significant role in educating our nation, to get protection from the portfolio committee, because portfolio committee is the one that we believe has a responsibility to safeguard the interest of education in the Republic of South Africa. Now, coming straight to specific issues, we want colleagues the honourable members to understand what we are saying here, and at no stage that we want to be misconstrued in one way or the other. Why are we raising the issue of the lack of information and transparency about the operations of the task team? It's very simple. If you read the terms of reference as designed by the minister, people who are implicated is the Department of Basic Education. Two, the trade unions. Now, it's like when there's an investigation or there's an allegation, you are to be investigated of a specific crime. Now, then you cannot be expected to go out there and search for witnesses against yourself. You can, but those witnesses are the ones that are going to show your cause, which means the appeal that we made is not as if we waited for the report to be released. No. When immediately after we were invited, the ministerial task team never wrote NATO a letter to say, we are starting an investigation on the 7th, if it was the 7th. We will be going to province A on the so-and-so date. This is the venue. We never had that information. The only information we received was that we must come ourselves and appear before the disciplinary committee in Umhlanga, in Durban. They gave us time, they gave us everything. So we had no control whatsoever about the process. We never influenced the process. We were not aware about the process ourselves. So it was practically impossible for us to issue the circular not knowing when, where, and how is the investigation going to be conducted. Because that information was the information with the task team. We were very fortunate just to be subpoenaed to appear, and we responded to that. Not that that information was shared to us for us to communicate with our members. Now, this is what we are saying. In the Department of Education, if there is anything, let me take headcounts, the department will issue a circular and say, the national treasurer or the provincial treasurer is going to conduct the headcounts. You're expected to come with qualifications, all your qualifications, your IDs, everything. And the department will take another step and write the school principals and tell them that what is expected of them should whoever that will be conducting that headcount come to the school. How are they going to see those people? That's the kind of information that we reported in our first meeting, first engagement with the ministerial task team. We said to them, people are not aware about your investigation that we have started. They don't know how to conduct you. But again, we cannot issue a circular about the process that we do not understand.
When there are questions that we cannot answer, if somebody wants to be anonymous, if a person is asking us that question, if I want to be anonymous, is the evidence that I'm going to come and present going to be allowed by the trust team? All those questions, we raise those questions with the ministerial trust team. Now, coming to the recommendations, we have noted the recommendations, and we have even said in our submission to the minister, we said, we are noting the recommendations. We are saying the recommendations are just showing that there is a problem in the system, but are not a true reflection of the size of the problem. We said to the minister, if the minister can do just a small investigation, just issue maybe a circular and find out from people from schools whether were they aware that there was an investigation that was conducted. Just to have a sense whether people were aware about the investigation and how many of them were aware. Maybe principals of schools, they take from each and every school to say, were we aware? Did you have an opportunity to participate? Do you feel that you have been properly represented? Did the investigation serve the purpose it was designed to serve? We are certain that we are going to get a simple and a straightforward answer that we were not aware about the investigation. An example, one district director in one province, he decided to write in a newspaper that after there was a leakage of the report, he wrote in a newspaper, he said in a newspaper, I want to participate in the ministerial task team, but I was not aware. Yes, I can just quote that person director. I think it's a district director of Umlaas in Durban. He wrote in a newspaper to show the officials of the department themselves, people responsible for the department, they were not aware about the process that was to be followed by the department. So having said that, Chairperson, what you are trying to say is an appeal to the members, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, that we have no intention of politicizing this issue. In fact, education should not be politicized. We want people with relevant experience. We want people with relevant qualifications. We want people with relevant expertise. We have witnessed a situation where a subject advisor of Afrikaans was appointed, a person who has never taught Afrikaans. That information is known in the department. So what we are trying to say to you is that we don't care where people who are appointed in positions belong to organizations, which organizations they belong to. There is nothing that is motivating like seeing the best teacher you respect, a person who is assisting learners to get distinctions in schools, to be given a position to become a subject advisor. Everybody will respect that person. But there is something frustrating most of our teachers to see people who have been absent from school for many days, to see people who have never passed the majority of learners, to see people, if a school underperformed, that there is a specific person that is responsible for that poor performance. And to see that particular person assuming a senior position of becoming a district director, of becoming a subject advisor, that thing frustrates the system, and most of our members, they get demotivated. They see no reason why they should improve their qualifications, why they must teach on Saturday, why they must do everything that they've done. We have seen competent principals of schools who will act for more than 2 years producing distinctions. But at the end of the day, when the position is advertised, then somebody else who is well known of being incompetent troublesome somebody from a certain school known in the area, assuming a senior position. Hence we said we are looking for the Judicial Commission of Inquiry, which is going to assist members of public, which is going to appeal to our own members and assure them about their lives, that if you participate in that commission, there is nothing wrong that is going to happen to you, such as losing your life, such as being frustrated in the system. People want justice. And we believe that this is the committee that has power to assist the people of this land to get the proper justice and the proper education system that we all deserve. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't want us to take this one lightly when we talk of SGB members to be capacitated. We we wouldn't be getting the MEC of Gauteng intervening in some of the schools, even the Module C schools. So we need to take this one very serious, where we need to make it a point that our SGB members, being it rural, being in townships, being in urban areas, they must be capacitated. And I will really request that we continue with this topic on selling of posts so that we are on the same level. If we are not on the same level, we'll continue accusing each other when we will be facing the real issue. For us to face the real issue, we need to come at the same level. And then the other thing that I need to highlight is we are glad that we have been reminded that beyond the system and beyond any other thing, there is a child who is a future leader that we need to focus on. Otherwise, we'll forget that we have got a duty to do as teachers. And you know, if you go to some of our schools, we have got schools that are dysfunctional. And some of the schools that are dysfunctional is because of poor leadership in our schools. And poor leadership, I'm emphasizing, is because of our recruitment system, our selection and appointment of our principals. If we don't look at how we appoint, select, and recruit our principals, we'll continue to be having dysfunctional schools, we'll continue to having bad results. Now, we need to come to that level of saying, are we appointing the right people into the right positions? And if we are appointing the right people in the right positions, I think won't be having problems in the near future. And I'm also requesting that organizations like SAQUA to do what they are supposed to be doing in evaluating the documents of our foreign educators. We can't be having a teacher teaching for 10 years with false documents. So if each and every organization can do what they are supposed to be doing, I'm telling you we can better South Africa. But if we don't want to better South Africa, we'll continue arguing without implementing some of these things. With that, I want to say thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Peu. Fetzer.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to respond to two questions that were directly addressed to us. The first by the Honourable Basson. No, FETSAS is not the umbrella body. It's a voluntary association of governing bodies. There are seven that are recognised by the Ministry. Not all of them are actually governing body associations. So we're a voluntary association. We're the oldest and the biggest. But we don't claim to be acting on behalf of all SGBs in the country. Thank you, Honourable Basson, through you, Chair, and COSA, for supporting us and giving recognition for the statements that and the approach that we've had. I also just want to add my voice of caution to painting rural SGBs all with the same brush. I mean, it is true. I think the majority of our members would probably be non-former Model C schools. But we find in those schools excellent parents, parents with integrity, as some speakers have said, very effective people and who know their responsibilities and what they need to do. Your question, Chair, was why do you allow yourselves to be dominated or intimidated and so on? There are basically three reasons. There are union observers that deliberately try to derail the process to promote the chances of their own members. That is a fact. And it's wider than it has been reported by the MTT. So from that perspective, I would say we would probably also support the commission, a judicial commission of inquiry into what is happening there for all the reasons that have been advanced. But it is true that there are union members who are deliberately abusing their position as observers. The second is the same happens with regard to the departmental resource persons, also abusing their process, misleading SGB members, particularly in cases where you have poorer communities, people that have not been, that have do not have the same level of quality of education as these resource persons. Then they abuse their authority also to promote candidates that they may want in those particular positions, whether members of unions or not. And then thirdly, it is true, yes, because of a lack of knowledge of parents, by parents, of their powers in terms of the law and of the laws themselves. So they, the lack of knowledge is being abused by observers, either as resource persons or as union observers. It's not a matter of allowing us to be intimidated. It is, in most cases, a lack of the necessary knowledge, expertise, and confidence to deal with the issues. And that knowledge can be transferred by way of training, but it's not happening. Thank you, Chair. Chair, may I take this opportunity to ask to be excused? We also need to have other arrangements which we have to meet. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so much. You are excused. GBF.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's terrible to be last in the queue, isn't it? I think already a lot of people have left and many others are looking as though they wish they had left. And most of what I wanted to say has already been said anyway. So if I may make just a couple of small points. I think that the obvious thing about what today is all about and what the report was all about and what all the investigation has been about is that we want to prevent undue influence and ensure the appointment of, as one of my colleagues said, the right people into the right post in the right schools at the right time. Now, how do we do that? And I would just touch on 5 points. I would say that the first one is the capacitation that everybody has been talking about, so that we don't have a lack of information, a lack of knowledge, a lack of understanding of the law, and a lack of knowledge of rights. So it is not in any way an insult to say we need to capacitate. It is a huge compliment and a huge necessity. The second thing is that I would just reiterate that unfortunately there is domination that takes place, and the worst dominance in those situations tend, by our experience, particularly in provinces where it seems to be most prevalent, are the very resourced people that are supposed to prevent that dominance. The third point that I wanted to make is that we didn't ask to be a member of ELRC. All that we ask is that our voice not be stilled in the debate. We would like to be part of what goes forward from here today and make proposals around how we believe everything can best be done. The fourth point that I would make is that what we are really terribly keen to see, I hope we can say continue rather than be introduced, is democracy in the education system and not dominance. Not dominance by any one group, not dominance by any one body, not dominance by any department, not dominance by anybody, but true democracy in our education. And we believe that that can best be done by having a system of checks and balances where no one group of people that is represented here or elsewhere is either given a dominant position or excluded. So we believe that, in fact, to give that sort of lack of dominance, you need the checks and balances. And given the fact that always the unions will be there, always the department will be there, we believe that the best group that we have that can ensure the balance that we are looking for between them, between communities, between schools, between teachers, will be the governing body, and we hope that they will continue to have a role to play in the democratization of education, the improvement of education, the appointment of the right people, and finally, the absolute focus and concentration on what is best for the children in our system and not other people who are in the system. The children must get the best and come first, not last.
Thank you very much to our stakeholders for those responses. Let me look at the time. We only have an hour to go before the House, not for the meeting, unfortunately. But I don't want to close out the honourable members if you want to have just one follow-up so that if ever there is something itchy, really, because after this, we need to have our minutes and make sure that we consolidate everything and come together and bring together everything that has been raised here, because we'll have to share this with our minister, since she's the one who has instituted even this MTT, because I know you have shared with her your views, but even from our side as a committee, we still need to engage the minister just to raise the issues that we've gathered from you. I'm not sure whether honourable members do have, really, can I be strict, just to say one follow-up so that honourable Mabiga, honourable Davis, honourable Shof, honourable Mokoto, in that order, please.
Just one quick one. Just to check as to how ELRC is taking the acknowledgement by SATU that cadre deployment will always be there. An example was being made to say, can you employ the PA from another organization? So for me, that is an acknowledgement to say it's done.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say that it is unfortunate that SATU have come here today with the attitude that they came with, and especially the racial name-calling, which I think was really unfortunate and just not called for today. And I can only conclude that we must have touched a nerve with SATU for them to resort to such desperate racial tactics today. But I just want SATU to understand that this report was not authored by anybody here. This report is a 284-page report. It was authored by an independent task team. When we use that report as the basis for the questions that we ask you, it is not because we have any malice or ill will against you. It is because it is our duty in terms of the Constitution to look at reports of this nature by independent task teams and to use that report as a basis to ask further questions and to hold various entities to account. And that's what we're doing. So it's nothing personal, and we do take exception to the fact that you've made it personal and that you've resorted to racial name-calling. And as I said, we can only conclude that it's because we touched a nerve and that you must have something to hide. And that's very unfortunate. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to check with all of them whether on the cases that you might be having, have you approached the law enforcement agencies? Because if there is wrongdoing, the MTT was not closing out any effort of the law enforcement agencies. So the unions... Have you done that?
Thank you, Chair. Just a question to SAIS with regard to the task team. I'd just like to know, allegations have been made with regard to a possible relationship between Mr. P. Magalela and Ms. M. DePolo. If this is the case, what is the credibility and the neutrality of such a team? And then the second question is also an allegation that's being made is that Mr. Magalela was being investigated for sexual abuse and for fraud. And this investigation was instituted by SACE. If you are at all able to waylay it, then it's fine. But I need to get an answer on that. Thank you.
Honourable Khoza.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to make my closing by making an appeal to all of us that our attitude determines the response that a person can get when he's asking a question. And I want to believe that if we can be able to work out on our attitude as to how do we phrase our questions when we're asking people, and we want to get a very respectable response, you have to give due respect to the person that you're asking a question. And that will be able to assist us going forward. On a lighter note, I want to take the gloves off from Satu and Honorable Davis, that they, if they can go outside and try to sort out the membership card thing. Thank you.
Honorable Khoza. Thank you, Honorable Khoza. Honorable Chaisa.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think I agree with Honorable Khoza when she said that perhaps now we may talk politics out of this. I do agree with that. But the point I'm coming to is that I'm very much happy that now the issue of capacity building on the part of school governing bodies now is being taken seriously even by the stakeholders here. Perhaps I might have emphasized now the rural, too much the rural schools, but now I'm happy that now it is being realized that you cannot just let it structure, then you just launch it like a ship, then you don't do anything on it. Capacity building is necessary, whether formal, whether formal, what is this? These models, these schools, formal models, these schools are rural, but now, as long as people have got to be capacitated. Thank you.
As I've given them 1 minute, it should be 1 minute even the site. Yes?
Chair, we believe that this was more of an engagement. Nothing said here will or shall be used against any party to the ELRC. As and when there's a dispute to refer to ourselves, the commissioner that we appoint shall act as directed by both our constitution and the LRA. If there's any evidence that any of our parties have conducted themselves in such a manner that jeopardize the process, such will be dealt with accordingly at that point in time. Thank you.
Thank you. The Honourable Member, I am subject to correction because I don't have the details here. But if they change, I will submit it to you. Yes, the reporter, I think, from City Press also indicated that there is a relationship between Mr. Magalela and Mr. Polo. And I said to him, please give me some evidence, and we will have to take it to a council to see if this is affecting her work. And that wasn't forthcoming. Mr. Magalela was charged eventually by SACE, and he was not found guilty by SACE of anything, to the best of my recollection. But because of the importance of our investigations, we have now relieved Mr. Magalela of doing any further panelist work for SACE because of these allegations. So this happened a long time ago, and he was already appointed there. Thank you, Chair.
That too, thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I'm not fight with Honorable Davis. The first point, Chair, is that we maintain as a union that central to the discussion should be the child. So as a union, as a teachers' union, we are prioritizing the future of our children. We are mindful of the fact that it is only through education that you can then uplift a child from poverty and give him hope for the future. So in whatever we are doing, we are always prioritizing the children in our country. To just correct Babu Malele on the issue of deployment, what the Deputy President was saying, he was speaking about political parties' deployment, not our union. Our union does not have a deployment committee. Our union does not have a deployment policy. We don't deploy. It is political parties that deploy. So he was not referring to SADU, but he was referring to political parties. He was just saying that political parties deploy wherever. Donald Trump now, setting up a cabinet in America, he will be deploying people into his testing. So SADU does not deploy, and I think that's the one that we want to correct. Mr. Davis, you did not touch any nerve. If you read each and every word in the report, each page, there's nothing in that report that says SADU sold post. What is there in the report is some members associated with SADU are mentioned, and that's the seven that we spoke about. Our union is saying we don't condone that, we condemn it. Our union is saying that if found on the wrong side of the law must take its course. We are not defending the wrong. But please read the report. It's there. There's nothing that says SADU as an organization sold posts. We never sold any posts. You can come with the commission. You will go to our bank accounts. You won't even get 1 cent. You won't get any gold that we receive as a union. That's why we are condemning it. And we are saying, whether you are a SADU member or an APTOSA or whatever member, if you have done something that is wrong, the law should take its course.
Thank you. No, I think those were the three that were. Oh, Natu?
There is the issue of law enforcement receiving complaints from maybe ourselves. Before we go outside, we try to exhaust the internal processes. For instance, when we receive serious allegations of appointment of specific people to the office-based position, I think it was 3 years ago in the province of KwaZulu-Natal, we approached the MEC for Education, who instituted his own task team. One of the unfortunate things that occurred was that when they were doing the investigation, the report that we received from the MEC was that the documents with all the information about the implicated people could not be located. So it means there was nothing that one could even take to the police because the evidence disappeared in as far as that report is concerned. So another issue is the issue of the safety of witnesses. So that is why we believe that if there is a focused investigation, like a judicial commission of inquiry, we believe that people will more or less feel safe. I don't know why, but they do. That is why cases that were never reported in the police station in Rustenburg, in Marikana, but people were able to come before the commission and presented evidence, though some of them lost their lives. But we in the workplace, we believe that if the president of the country has decided to intervene and institute a judicial commission of inquiry, people who voted that president, they will always come back and say, we have confidence in the system. So that is why we are saying the Constitution of the Republic does make provision for the intervention of the President of the Republic. Hence, we are saying the recommendation from the Portfolio Committee to the President, to the Minister, to the establishment of the Judicial Commission of Inquiry will serve the peoples. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members and our colleagues from all the stakeholders. When I can summarize our meeting today, there are so many things that we all agree upon. One is that we are all putting that African child there, or that learner, to be the most beneficiary in whatever we do. So in no way that we need to compromise the education, the quality education of that child. To our stakeholders, if you can go through so many reports from our portfolio committee, one thing that we always talk to is the quality of leadership in our schools. That's to say, we believe the leadership of the schools, they form the nerve of the school. That is where everything is happening. Once we have a
good. That's we need to strengthen our schools, make sure that leadership there is also very much strong. Secondly, one other thing as a committee that we always look at, we always say at district level, the districts are the weakest link that we have within the system. And with all the reports we're getting from the minister herself, try to strengthen the district leadership, try to strengthen the district program. Now, if we're going to be having such even pointing to the level of people that are in the district, I think we all agree as to say this is the thing that we can never allow, and we want those to be strengthened so as to see our system moving forward. Again, I will say we are looking for competent people with competency, qualified people. I wish in future we can even have this further discussion, because there are so many things that have been unveiled in this meeting for today. Even this issue of domination, issue of influence, issue of selling of, you know, where are we influencing? Where? Those are the discussions that you need to look at. But for me, it says we are somewhere we have started. What you are agreeing upon here is that all of us, we move out of this meeting with that determination as to saying, let us work out, let us make sure that we uproot corruption. I'm so happy no one has defended the corruption here. Let us see the law taking its course on those people that did not perform well, that have not behaved, so that even others can learn lessons from that. There are so many things that we are going to remain behind as a committee. It's a pity we are at the end of the year to make sure how do we process some of the things that we have heard from you. Just like the issue of the judicial, the commission, those are the things that you need to sit back as a committee and process as to say, what is it that we say, if ever, what are we going to move forward to that, engage the minister and make sure. But meanwhile, we hope and believe that all the stakeholders that are here, together with the department, we are going to be working hand in hand to make sure that corruption is uprooted and we do deliver quality basic education. And with our entities, really, we still have fully confidence on you. You are doing a wonderful job for our system. Continue with such. I will always count you, ELRC. I know you are looking at me when I say that. We will always remain our entity, though we might be delisted as it has happened. But there is so much. We will always have that link with you, and we will always rely on the things that you do. So thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you very much to our stakeholders. Mr. Dolop and Mr. Tyler, you can meet Honorable Davis outside. I like the smile that you showed each other towards the end of the meeting. We love to see that smile continuing between the three of you. No, he likes you. Thank you so much.